This is the regular meeting of the Improvements Committee, Rancho Mirage Community Services District of August 1st. Called to order. The agenda moves right into the Improvement Staff Report. Did we want to move Jay up in front? Tony, are you dedicated to staying here?
I did invite...
If you could do it to the front, that would be ideal.
Thank you, okay.
And then I'm going to get Lisa Madaus on the phone. Michael?
For the next item.
Okay, so then they'll go to item two, thank you.
Okay, so I was approached by the Rancho North owners requesting an access easement through our district property located just west of the district office to gain legal access to the existing traffic signal on Highway E16. I don't know if you've seen the letter and the map, if you can pull the map up when you get a chance, Amelia. I don't think this is the first time that the Improvements Committee has talked about this. I went back to a January 2020 meeting and it was briefly discussed and it never really went anywhere from there. I did reach out to the engineer, and at this time, yeah, keep going, Amelia. That's something else.
Oh, that's something else?
Yeah, all the way to the end.
Very good, thank you, sir. Aha, the map.
Let me make that smaller. And so that at this point in time, there's no general indication on what the development would be on that 39-acre parcel and or what the traffic volume would be. The assumption is that it would, of course, increase traffic to that light and create some stacking behind, but I don't know how that would be mitigated or whether or not it would cause an issue for CSD. So that's really all I know about this project. It was brought up, we were talking about easements. I was talking about the easement request that I had over at Cantova Way for the district to access the lift station. And then they brought up this easement request that they were potentially looking for. So how familiar are either of you with this property and or easement request?
Did you have a...
I don't know.
We're going to try and use, if it's not a bother, sir.
Nope.
And we've got Tony Velez here as a representative to briefly speak about the project.
Well, I've seen this concept before. I'm not sure I've seen this map before.
I can tell you that there's not, I don't believe there to be any major utilities in the easement that we would worry about as far as what I've seen. That the district owns, although I have not seen the conduit for any electrical conduit for our solar field.
Well, easement, can you make that small?
Yeah, actually, square up a little bit.
I sure can.
So we can actually get to the easement. Oh, other way. Getting closer. There we are. Right. Yeah. And if you could just scooch it over.
Up.
Yes, make it a little smaller.
Am I doing okay?
That's fine.
Yeah, that looks good.
Okay, I'm getting what you guys want. Okay.
So my question is, do we know what our responsibilities are? Are we required to give them an easement and is 50 feet the right number? How do we know?
Well, I think they're asking for a 50-foot easement. We're not required to give them an easement.
Is that the best path for us if we did give one?
Oh, you mean to access our property?
Well, yeah. Is that the best route for us? Do we have plans for that land?
I don't have any plans for that land. And I don't know any plans that we have for that land. Mealy, can we go back to the map?
Go. Oh, hello.
So, Tony, come on up here and give us sure. A little rundown. You got 1, 2, 3, 4 separate parcels, I guess, and that's all. That's the 39 acres.
That is the 39 acres.
Four yeah. Parcels.
Well, right now it's just one, but we're going to subdivide it into four. Is a thought. We've had some interest on this property. And we're trying to figure out whether we should subdivide it into four different ones. We may sell it as one, but no real plans right now as far as what it's going to be.
So you don't know if this is housing or commercial?
It could be. We've had discussions with people that want to do workforce housing on this. But the idea is, you know, we've got access from Jackson Highway there, but it's with the way it's situated, it's a dangerous, you know, left turn out. Left turn in. And so the thought is if we could get an easement through the CSD property, it would make it easier. We understand that there'll probably be road improvements that will need to be made. But it's just ease of access more than anything else at this point.
I think a lot of this is going to boil down to on what the intersection looks like, where it comes out.
Yeah, again, you know, we know that improvements will have to be made to that intersection, but we're just trying to get the ball moving and give the CSD permission and easement through that property.
And what's the timeline?
No timeline at this point.
So we're just this is a concept, yep. Starting the concept, because yep. I think the committee would probably want to see things like, you know, what kind of development's going back there, what kind of traffic can we expect, and what might be some design alternatives for the intersection to alleviate stacking?
Yeah, and I think if you guys put those questions down, you know, we can have Mike work on the concept.
Yeah, without knowing what's going in there, and some kind of traffic study. Right turn pockets.
Yeah, is we got traffic.
There's a left turn. This area. Left turn pocket going westbound. There must be.
I think there's just. Isn't there just one lane coming to the light?
Yeah.
There's no pocket. There's no pocket. Yeah, that would all have to be worked out. What made you rule out improving the intersection where you have the right in, right out?
That's a good question. I'm not sure. I have to ask Mike what the thoughts were, but I think other than probably the safety reasons, you know, of having that done, because as you come around that corner, you know, it's kind of a quick hit. Right, as you make that, if you were to make a right turn on the property.
Yeah, that's a nasty curve.
Yeah.
Catches it by surprise sometimes.
Yeah, exactly. So with me, it's, you know, obviously, well, safety reason, hitting the stoplight here at the CSD office.
I don't know how you'd plan for it unless you know what's going in there, at least have it. Have some limitations on what would go in there. First, I'm not opposed to hearing more about it. Yeah. If you want to develop some thoughts.
Yeah, again, you know, we don't know. We've talked to several people that have expressed an interest in the property, but nothing firm and nothing sold at this point.
I guess you could rule out some things that, like a trucking parking lot or something like that.
So you know, we've had workforce housing people. Actually, a developer wanted to go in there. We talked to them, but we probably ruled it out. But they were talking about mobile modular home in that area, but it just that's not conducive to Rancho Murrieta. So It's just discussions. You know, we have a broker that we've that's listed the property for us, and he's brought a couple of ideas, but nothing firm at this point.
Is the fire department going to want two ways in and two ways out, or can you get away with it? You'd have to.
Yeah, I'm not certain.
Yeah, I don't know. By the time you made all those improvements and widened the highway with turn pockets and whatnot to get that traffic through there, that you couldn't improve Jackson Road at that other intersection that you've got in mind. But I guess that's a question for the engineer.
Yeah.
I think the tricky thing is going to be that intersection with the, you know, if you're reducing traffic coming out of the south, definitely a left turn lane would probably be a good idea. I think it's all going to boil down to that intersection, how the intersection is designed. Because you've got traffic coming out of the south, you've got our traffic, and you've got E16.
Yeah, I can't imagine that you're not going to have right turn and left turn pockets and widen the highway there. And if you're going to do that, I'm just wondering if you could do something at that other location for a similar cost that makes for easier access, because the access you've got shown here is kind of convoluted going around our facilities.
Can you show us on the map, can you draw, trace out where it would actually go, Tony?
Oh, yeah, I mean, you can see the actual outline of it already. They've had access to this thing. Well, obviously, property engineers, when they were the training sites, they weren't going in and out of here.
Okay.
They've always been here.
Okay.
So that's just formalizing this access.
Right around the
20 years. Yeah. I mean, this right turn in and right turn out, making a left turn out of here would be dangerous.
Sure.
And I'm not sure if Caltrans would approve, you know, two stoplights, but as close as they are. We would probably widen this road to make it safer with a, you know, right turn in here. It's just for safety reasons.
Okay. And what about that curve down?
This here?
Yeah.
That's the gate. That's the gate, but of course, currently located right now.
Okay.
Wait, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
The gate right over here.
All right. Well, okay. Marty, we just need to hear more.
Yeah. If you can, you know, express your questions in a written format, so we can get them over to Mike.
Okay.
And we could address them.
All right. Okay.
Thank you.
Thanks, Tony.
Thank you.
No action needed. Basically, an idea out there. So let's move on to item A on the agenda, the Integrated Water Master Plan Scope of Services.
What did you talk about?
2J? This is 2J.
No, this is 2A. We're going to go down to... Oh, you want to speak? Oh, that...
Yes.
We do have a comment from the public, sir.
Okay.
I think you've heard plenty enough. I mean, what's in it for CSD? Giving away our driveway for somebody else to use? I mean, you get nothing out of it? Inconvenience us? What? I mean, seriously, what is in it for CSD? Why? I mean, this is his problem. Seriously, I'd like to hear what's in it for CSD. Randy?
I don't think we're there yet. We just got a little information that came out of the blue. We're not here to negotiate an agreement. This is the first we've heard of it.
Well, so. We've heard it once before, but it's like going home and the business next door to you wants to an easement for your driveway. I mean, if they did that to me, I'd say, bug off. I mean, there's absolutely nothing in it for CSD. And, you know, what is that land? What's it for right now? Agriculture? They bought it for agriculture? It's not your responsibility to provide them a driveway. I mean, I tell them to go take a hike.
Okay.
Okay.
Thank you.
All right. Now let's move on to 1A.
And Amelia, I think we have a couple of people on Teams as well.
I have Lisa Madaus on the line.
Okay, great. Is her vocal working?
Morning, or Lisa. Audio? Here we go. Can you speak up? I'm going to put you right by my speaker.
Can you hear me now?
No.
Yes.
Barely.
Barely.
How's that now?
You'll just have to speak right into your microphone, Lisa, so we can hear you.
Okay.
All right. Yeah, I can present it, but it'd be nice to have you there for questions, Lisa.
Sure.
Okay. All right, so we met with the Atkins Mattis team to discuss the proposed amendment number 2 to the District Integrated Water Master Plan. They're requesting a fee increase of $33,562 to cover the unforeseen technical costs and additional public outreach support effort. This contract amendment will cover several items, including the district has requested a cost on 3 additional public meetings to cover each phase of the story map. So the first public meeting will occur on the 16th on the board meeting, where the district water and recycled water system will be presented, along with the corresponding phase 1 of the story map outlining the water supply information. The second public meeting is planned as a town hall meeting to discuss the second phase of the story match, which will cover the anticipated water demands. We have tentatively set this meeting for Saturday, October 14th. The third additional public meeting will be a town hall style meeting that will discuss the alternatives to meet those water demands. This is in addition to the meetings that were added on the previous amendment, for 3 special board meetings, scenario building, capital improvement alternatives, and the draft plan presentation. Those were approved in the previous amendment. So these would be 3 public meetings in addition to the other 3. The original scope did not include updating the water demand forecasting for our financial service, our FSAs. This would include an assessment of future developments, both constructed to date, approved and proposed by each development, to ensure that each development has not over-allocated their water capacity according to the terms of our FSAs. The original scope also did not include further assessment of the demand factors beyond the billing consumption data trends. I'm asking for a little bit more intensified demand data driven by lot size, proposed lots that are coming out, because lot size dictates water demand. The original scope did not contain assessment of specific estimated demand for individual commercial lots versus relying on past water supply assessment information. Additional effort has been required to support additional story map information to assist the district in updating the water alternatives in the following ways: further investigation of water rights associated with reservoir volumes, review of daily operational data for allowable storage carryover volumes based on pumping history and water rights, and revisions to modeling approaches to include recent water rights information. Additional budget was also required for public outreach, as public outreach consultant was expected to develop most of the narrative elements and content, with Atkins Mattis support for data elements only. Atkins Mattis instead led the development of all elements and content and the additional GIS elements, which required substantial additional time. Additionally, the focus of the story map shifted towards a detailed look at Rancho Murrieta Community Services District water rights supplies and required multiple builds to refine content per district direction. future story mat phases should be limited to 3 total builds per phase based on the review and edits without a scope amendment. Lisa, did you want to speak on any of these points and justifications for the second contract amendment?
No, I think that was a thorough summary. I mean, basically the scale is detailed lot size and spatially in a subgroup by, you know, each development in order to align with the FSA was along with the added story map, public outreach meeting time.
That's
kind of it in a nutshell. Covered it really well.
Maybe.
She said you covered it really well.
Let me grab that's as loud as we can get.
Can you hear me okay?
Is that where the speaker's coming out?
Yeah, here I go.
Oh,
so talk again.
I can speak it louder if you need. Yeah, can you hear me now? Better?
Grab myself.
Oh, I think we're gonna call you on the cell phone, Lisa, and put you on speaker on the cell.
Tell Lisa I'm going to call her.
I did.
I would take her off Teams.
Good morning. Is that better?
Can you guys hear it a little bit better?
Can you hear Marty?
Okay, great.
Oh, yeah, okay. Yeah.
Oh, now it's going to go through. If you put her up to this, it'll go through that, and everybody can hear her.
Right, that's what I'm doing.
Oh, you got it right there. Okay.
All right, go ahead, Lisa. Say what you were going to say before.
No, I just was expressing in summary that it's really the scale of going down to the individual lot size and by the individual developments aligning with the FSA. Along with the added story map efforts and the meeting time to have the town halls, is it in a nutshell what we're asking the additional funding to support?
Lisa, just curious, what percentage impact are the additional town hall meetings to the scope amendment?
Do you mean in terms of cost or time
like percentage of the amendment cost?
Oh, good question.
Just roughly off the top of your head.
That had more of his time added since he's the prime. I don't see, I have the final version maybe since I was out. I only have our portion in front of me at the moment. Let me see. I'm looking at my email to see if I can find him sending it back to me.
I'm not following this, did we not get a backup to this $33,562 that we've analyzed
and
agreed or not agreed with?
In terms of
you still there, Lisa?
Yeah, I'm here. You just didn't
you got something this morning?
Pick it out that way. I'm looking at what Dan's final submission was. So it was while I was on vacation.
Oh, did you print those up, Martin?
Yeah.
Go ahead. Do you guys have other questions while she's looking for that?
I had one little question. I think you said something in here that you're going to look at the actual lot sizes. Does that include looking at the possibility of ADUs?
Did you hear that question?
No, can you repeat it?
Yeah, the question is, when we're taking a look at the lot sizes for water use, the exact lot sizes, are we also taking a look at ADUs or the potential for ADUs? And I guess the question is, how are we going to handle ADUs?
That's a good question. And that's a current question. We just got the updated information last week on lot sizes and maps. We don't have plot plans, you know, basically, essentially, with what type of models or any that would have, casitas assigned or, you know, ADU type units. Based on my recall, we had some assumptions previously. I'd have to look back at that. We'd have to revisit that as an active question.
Yeah, but I think the ADU, I believe, was in the original scope. And my thoughts are we would take some kind of a probabilistic analysis of what other communities have done with ADUs and try to potentially apply that.
Yeah, and in other communities, usually the offset is landscaped area outside. So, like, a small indoor use is small compared to what we would assume for the outdoor demand as irrigated landscape instead in a climate like here in Rancho Marietta. So it's actually conservative if we assume that there's less ADUs or not ADUs and assume instead irrigated area outside.
Oh, I see. I see what you're saying. You're saying that due to the landscaping.
Footprint.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Outside footprint. And if you make an assumption about irrigated area, loosely we, feel that we've conservatively covered the demand that could go to an ADU instead.
Well, that's why I think it would also behoove us to try to get some idea about some of the house footprint sizes, if we could get that information to, let us know how much landscape, how much house.
Mm-hmm.
But failing that knowledge, we use a conservative method.
Mm-hmm.
Well, this lot size thing has been discussed quite a bit in the last couple years, that's a major difference. What was built from what was originally pictured, and I'm surprised that it wasn't part of the original proposal. But you agree that it was not, and it's an add.
Yeah, I believe that, getting down in the weeds on the actual lot size itself was an add. I think they were doing it per EDU before, and that's correct, right? We were doing it previous to that, it was per EDU.
Well, we had them scaled, by relative lot size. Now we have lot-specific information, so that's
a little bit more accurate.
Like another layer more detailed, than we had before. Before, it was more generalized, just, X number of lots at the, less than 12,000, but more than 8,000, for example, and number of lots, so it was scaled, relatively by lot size, but just general,
So it'd be like this many under, this many over, versus actual lot size.
Exactly.
More of an analog view.
Yeah, well, I think it's important to do it that way.
Grouped by lot size category, I guess is the right way to say it. So there was some scaling by lot size and relative size, but not specific to the detailed lot size plan, because the tentative map wasn't that detailed that was available to provide the district, I presume, at that time.
Yeah, I think they understand.
Yeah.
So, Michael,
so we conservatively were estimating by EDU. Now we have better information, basically, more detail.
So, Michael, you agree that that all of these items are adds to the original proposal? I guess my only hang up is a breakdown that I haven't seen. I guess it's available, the $33,562 and where it comes from and so on and so forth. And I think that's just a matter of you going through it and telling the board that, I've been through this and it makes sense and this is probably... I don't think there's any question that these items need to be added.
Yeah.
It's just, okay, someone needs to look at these costs and make sure that it's reasonable.
I have looked at their actual hours. And I've requested a letter, which they have provided. And so the only thing that they need to do, as far as I'm concerned, is, come up with an actual contract amendment that can be approved. And then we can attach the letter and the hours to that. Basically, we're just coming to the improvements committee. Is this something that you feel comfortable sending it to the board? Once if the improvement committee decides to move this to the board, at that time, I'll ask for a specifically written amendment with the letter and the hours as attachments for all to review and feel good about. But so far, it's reasonable.
Yeah, I think a summary of what cost goes to which,
like a percentage,
each of these items, what cost is associated with it. Maybe you have that already, right?
Might be broken down in that spreadsheet.
I don't have a percentage. I can do a percentage.
Or just dollar amounts on a spreadsheet.
Per item. Okay.
So, Amelia, we've got this as a discussion item. Can we...
Move it to the
Move
board?
Move it to the board.
I'll put it on the agenda for August 19th.
All right.
I concur, yeah.
Any other questions for Lisa while she's still on?
Nope.
All right, thank you very much, Lisa, for joining us.
Sure.
You have a good rest of your day.
Same to you.
Thanks.
Thank
Bye.
You.
All right, what's going on with the drainage ditch maintenance?
Well, we're going to be getting, we were unsuccessful in getting the CAL FIRE crew to come out and give us a bid this year. I will be receiving a second bid from an additional sheep and goat herder. And I'm also going to be meeting with someone that does weed eating. It's their business, and get a quote from them. Ron Greenfield is also going to be meeting with the California Conservation Corps. So I'm hoping between one of those we'll have a reasonable estimate to get the weeds done this year. And potentially my goal is just to get someone that just comes in every year and it's just done, so we're not scrambling. I'd like to get it done in the spring would be my goal. Spring is a really tough time. There's a lot of competition, but if we can build a good relationship and have someone just coming back every spring, have them locked in, that's my ultimate goal. So that's just kind of an update.
Did we talked about trying to coordinate with RMA because they're obviously doing the same stuff on their properties. I know they do a lot of it in-house, but don't they contract out some of theirs?
I don't know. I know that we have talked to RMA about the potential of sharing, some goat time, and it's just apparently this year it's not in their budget. They will end up benefiting a little bit because you can only squeeze the goats in so narrow, so they end up getting a little benefit from when we put the goats in. I'm hoping that if goats and sheep do become a solution for the district moving forward, that we're able to potentially work with RMA, help
take out some of their workload and help us with some of those project costs.
And the goat company that we used last year, that was the company that whose price doubled or whatever?
Yeah, it was just, it was too much.
They wanted, so where did you find the this new one that you're talking about?
Actually, Mimi found it. There was an article in the Sacramento Bee about goat herding. And she contacted the writer of that article, and they gave us, you know, four good goat references, and one of them actually got back to us and should be getting back to us with the price.
Okay. Marty, anything on this?
No. Sounds like you're trying hard to make something happen, but it's not always easy.
Well, the ultimate goal is just to get that, find a good vendor that's a reasonable price and get them back every year. Just lock them in. That's the goal.
All right. Calero fish stocking.
So I was approached by the fishing club. They would like to put in additional forage fish, including blackfish and potentially some adult spawning bluegill in Lake Clair. They're also considering red-eye sunfish as well as shad. This has been discussed with the Department of Fish and Wildlife, and I didn't include the email, but there was a supportive response for that. The time frame for this stocking would occur late February, early March. They want to get some early approval from CSD so they can just have something to plan on. So that's really all I know at this point.
Your proposal here is to send it on to the board. I always thought the general manager ought to be able to approve this.
That'd be my guess. I mean, this isn't a legislative item. This is more like managing the operation. But it's since it's improvement related, I thought I'd bring it here. And if the improvement committee says doesn't have any issues with it, then I can let Mimi know that, you know, her decision, if she decided to, would be supported by the improvements committee.
That's my thought.
Yep, I agree. This is not a board item, I don't think. So.
Thank you.
All right. Private backflow users.
So I was surprised to find out there's...
I don't need to keep going down this list. This is just one after another, so you can just keep rolling.
Okay, you got it. like I mentioned, there's 138 registered backflow prevention assemblies within the district water system. Of those 138 registered assemblies, the district is only responsible for 20 of them. The remaining 118 assemblies are the responsibility of commercial and private residences. These owners are required to have them tested on an annual basis by a licensed Sacramento County backflow prevention assembly tester. We always receive a courtesy notice if there's a private backflow assembly that's out of compliance for testing. This notice is supplied by Environmental Management. And so we typically go tell the person, hey, you need to get this done. I've got a letter started that's just going to be a generic form letter. So when this happens, we'll be able to provide them warning that this needs to happen, instructions on how to get their backflow tested. And, the difference would be, if we get someone that just refuses to test or we can't get a hold of them, we just handle it, and then we put that cost on their next bill potentially. And if we have a problem user, we give them a shut off notice should they not comply. But this is really about protecting our water system. So if there's no objection, we'll use that form letter and get people in compliance.
Yeah, I don't know. Do we have a policy that addresses this, and what happens if they don't do it, and so on? Is that something we need to come up with?
Well, we have a policy that says that that talks about accessing the public water system, and this kind of potentially could fall into that. If we want a policy directly to discuss this, we could. I just don't see the need. Okay. We do have the right to shut people's water off for noncompliance and charge them actual costs.
Can you explain to me why there's only 138 of these? That includes private residences. I thought every lot had a backflow preventer.
No. It's.
I guess there is on the sprinkler system, but.
Yeah, there are for some major sprinkler systems, for the recycled water, dual plumb recycled water users. You know, some of them will have backflow preventers, just to keep that recycled water out of the system potentially.
So the pipe that goes to the house after the meter, it's in that line or before that line? Where is it?
I believe the backflow preventer, and I could be wrong, but I believe the backflow preventer would be in the potable water line. So that there's a leak and the pressure loss, if they're watering recycled water.
On the private side of the connection.
I believe so, yeah. It's they own it. Same with the commercial, those big commercial lots.
Yeah, I have one, and I get that letter from the city of Rancho Cordova every year, and it says if you don't have it tested and get the paper back to us, then we're going to go out and do it. Same thing.
It's similar.
Yeah,
it's just a good practice to make sure people are in compliance. And sometimes people don't know what to do, or sometimes, you know, it changed hands and they have the wrong address, and so that helps kind of get them back in line. Currently, I don't think we have anybody that's outstanding. We have access to that online. We can check.
Okay.
All right. So
I'm okay with it.
Yeah.
Item E, contract with Lumos and Associates. Actually, we had a meeting yesterday with Lumos and Associates about with Travis and Susan Wren to discuss getting the information to them and the tentative schedule. There was some discussion about trying to truncate the schedule for the CIP and the rate study to get us closer to 2018 season. And there's a number of things that the district is going to have to have available to the team in order for us to make the July, if we want to increase rates July 1, there's a number of things that we're going to have available to them on an earlier basis. And so they're going to be providing, me that schedule with the due dates for things like the audit, starting balances for infrastructure. That's going to be one of the more important ones. Also, what infrastructure comes out of the Integrated Water Master Plan and how that relates to the CIP. So there's a couple of targets that we have to meet in order to meet that schedule. Now, if we can't, then the district needs to think about implementing the 218 process potentially in October or December, depending on how quickly we can get them the information. They could make some concessions on schedule, but only if we can get them the information when they need it, which is understandable. So I think it's going to be a good team. So far, I've had two meetings with them, and they're very organized, and they provide very good meeting notes after every meeting. So I think we're in good hands.
So when are we supposed to get this schedule of when they need our information?
I'm supposed to be getting that sometime this week.
That seems fair to me. I mean, they need stuff, we need stuff, we got to just do our part.
Right.
And if we can, we can, and we can't, we can't.
If we can get those starting balances, that's going to be huge. Okay. With the other pieces, the Integrated Water Master Plan, whatever improvements are requested or suggested from that plan, if those haven't been decided by a certain date, we could take you know, more of a conservative alternative from that and plug it in if we needed to. But we definitely have to have our starting value for our reserve fees.
Do we have a schedule from Mattis on when we might be getting those, like the CIP information?
I think we'll probably be getting our CIP information November or December, depending on how fast we move.
Okay.
All right, anything else on E? All right, item F, we're going to be doing a code red test for the Rio Oso pressure zone. We created a GIS layer for all those that are part of the Rio Oso pressure zone. And that shapefile we were able to take into the code red system and utilize it if there ever was a problem with the Rio Oso tank or pressure loss. We'd be able to just contact those people instead of, you know, people that weren't involved. So we're going to be doing sending out a test sometime in August, early August, and it'll just say something like, this is a test of the emergency code red system. This is only a test.
Okay.
Replacing aerators at Chesba Reservoir. And Travis, pipe in when I get this wrong. SAP proposed to replace some of the failed aerators in the water treatment supply intake area of Chesbro. Staff believe the aerators form a barrier to the naturally occurring concentration of manganese entering the treatment facility. I'm assuming that this is being accomplished by the aeration causing the minerals to precipitate out of solution. The failed aerators are the older rubber-style aeration diffusers. Staff have replaced sections of the older diffusers in the past with the newer membrane-style aeration pods with good results. We desire to replace a portion of these old failed systems with two newer style independent systems of compressor and diffuser pods. The replacement cost to accomplish this has been quoted about $10,500. Travis, you want to provide more details?
What we want to do is there's two older compressors that are actually in the cabinet, and they are leaking, and what they're doing is they're leaking oil into the tubing, and it's blowing the tubings, and the compressors are starting to fail. What we want to do is pull those two compressors and add two new Casco compressor setups, like for the new ones that we have. Where we'll be in good shape here is we've already got all the heads placed into the lake. All we would have to do is take the tubing off the old compressors and mount it into the new ones as we do it. So the cost is just to buy the two new compressor heads or the compressor units and have our electrician run the power to them. So that $10,529 is the cost of the two units. Each unit runs three compressor heads, so we'll be replacing six for six on the compressors.
So Travis, are those, you said those are separate systems, if like, I don't know, something happened to one, you still have a couple going because they're separate?
Right, we'll have a total of four units. Each unit has four heads, and then the what's good about these Cascos is if the motor blows on it, you just pull it out and put another one in. We have a couple of them on the shelf instead of having to call out like Quincy or something if these big Quincy old compressors give out.
Travis, can you speak on the manganese issue that we had the Wednesday before last, and where are you, what kind of, just briefly, what you went through and what you discovered in relation to these aerators?
Right. So we had a scare last Wednesday. The manganese just kept, we went from very little to...
Wednesday before last, right?
The board meeting Wednesday.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, Wednesday before last, I apologize. And we all of a sudden just skyrocketed on the manganese residual coming into the plant. We tried everything we could to try to get it under control. We couldn't figure out what was going on. One of my operators noticed that a couple of the compressors, we were missing, you know, on the camera, we can actually see the compressors bringing the bubbling up in the water. On the camera, we noticed that some of them were not working, and they went up, and two of the tubings were blown on the old compressors. And once they got those hooked back up, like within a half hour, our residuals dropped by like 90%, and we were able to get it under control. So the air affects the manganese in the soil, and what it does is it takes it from a dissolved and turns it into a precipitant, so the membranes can take it out. We don't have any problems with the other plant, the conventional, but we have to have those in a precipitant before they hit the membranes. And there's, even at the low flow, there's only 20 minutes at the most of time to precipitate it. So when we treat it with the potassium permanganate, sometimes it doesn't have enough time for it to react. So we have to make sure that all of our aeration is working and staying working, and hoses aren't blowing and stuff. So this is in my opinion, our first line of defense against our manganese that happens every year.
But it's not the complete manganese removal. It helps reduce it.
It helps reduce it. It's not, it, I mean, just the notice that we went from, just to give you an idea, we went from a 0.6 milligram per liter residual down to a 0.25 once we got those two tubings working, which makes it more manageable. Because since we have to rely on sending samples out to the lab to find out what our dissolved is, because that's what you feed the potassium permanganate to the dissolved, and that's always 2 days old. Since we don't have any online in-house analyzers, we have to make sure that those aerations are working, so that way when we do feed our potassium permanganate, we have a better chance of it taking care of the problem. The less you have, the better off we are, obviously. So
what would it take to do the testing in-house?
About $130,000. Hawk sells, about 5 years ago, I was in talk with Tom. Not 5 years ago, well, whenever Tom was here. It was like Paul was gone and Tom was here. Hawk sells these online units. At that time, they were $65,000 each unit. And then Prominent also sold a unit for $32,000, but that one didn't measure low enough. So it was told to me that, no, you don't need them. You know, do what you got to do to make it work. We're not spending the money. Okay. So we have, like I said, the quickest the lab can do it is 2 days turnaround time.
So how did you know that it went from 0.6 to 0.25?
We have a little colorimeter that gives you the total, the total manganese residual, but it doesn't break down the difference between dissolved and precipitate. So it just gives us a total. And what we do is it's not real accurate, but it gives us a wag, just a guess to start with, is we will take a sample. We have little membrane filters that go on a syringe that are the size of our filter, and we'll run the water through that and do the test. It gives us an idea of where to start our manganese, to, you know, that would give us our dissolved. And then you start low to see if you are affecting a change.
But so if I understand what you're saying, it gives you a rough idea of the total manganese, but not a breakdown of the dissolved versus the precipitate.
That is correct. So we know
It gives you enough to potentially have a strategy.
It lets us know that it let us know that the aeration, putting those two lines back up, caused a positive effect. But that's all we have to go off of when we're doing that. And when we have an issue that goes, then we basically have to go off of, you know, conservative guess, experience, knowledge, different things, oh crap, stuff like that. We had to flush the plant for, 4 hours? You know, just to get, so that wouldn't go out into the system, because obviously my goal is to keep it out of the system. And the way that the way plant one is set up, we have to turn plant two off to be able to flush plant one. So for those 4 hours, no water is going out into the system to the district. And that's, in my opinion, a design flaw, but that's a completely different story. So we need to do, in my opinion, we need to do whatever we can to keep the aeration working as best as we can. I mean, I'd love to put a whirlpool out there and go, but obviously, you know.
But when it's working, it seems like it does a pretty good job of knocking a majority of it down.
And correct.
That's where we're at right now. And, eventually I foresee some kind of an upgrade to the water plant to where you have pretreatment prior to the membrane so you can knock precipitate out and use both plants. You know, the problem with the manganese is people say we have a certain amount of capacity, but we don't when we have the manganese because we have to drop plant one out. So that, and it's usually at the highest demand times. So, you know, I foresee, you know, at some point, you know, the first step would be, you know, we get the board to approve a small bench scale study about what needs to happen to get the full capacity out of the plant. And then step two would be that design and a plant upgrade eventually. Because we have a couple of things happening. We've got membranes that can't really remove the manganese that dissolved. And then we have plant two, which is becoming antiquated and harder to get parts for. So those two pieces there tell me that, you know, in the next few years we should really plan on what the upgrade is going to be.
Is it possible to get some sort of a cooperative agreement with our neighboring water districts to do testing? Some of them might have a fancy machine that we don't.
It's possible.
There is nobody local that has them. Most of the facilities that are local that are around, because I've made calls. They are conventional treatment plants, and conventional treatment plants have enough contact time to deal with the manganese. The closest place that's got...
But are they testing?
No, they're not even testing.
Oh.
Because they don't need to.
Oh, okay.
The South San Joaquin's got facilities like ours, but they've got so much pretreatment time that it doesn't even affect them.
You toured that facility, right?
We toured that facility. They've got DAFs and sed basins before it even hits their membranes. We don't have any of that. We got a pipe that the water comes down, goes through a flash mixer and flocculator, and goes directly to the membranes. So if we were to ever, if the plan is to ever put that plant at 6 million, and we're in the middle of the summer, you're talking 3 to 5 minutes before it hits those membranes. Ain't going to work. My opinion, just based off of what I've seen, I've been running that plant since its inception. So
this tester is only for manganese.
This tester is manganese specific, and you would need two of them. You would need one on the raw water line, water coming in, and then what's going out. The main thing, obviously, first is, you know, be able to test what's coming in. But you have to be able to test it before you put the potassium permanganate in. And where we've got that line, we've actually got that line shoved into the raw water intake line to give us as much contact time as possible. So it's every year it's a new and exciting adventure of
But you haven't had a manganese release in many years, right?
That's because, and look, I don't toot my own horn unless I have to, but, you know, I've spent many a nights at that water plant, me and my staff, making sure that you guys don't have brown water. We had that 2019 issue, and it was bad. But you guys have no idea what we go through during the summer to ensure that you don't have brown water. And, you know, it starts to take toll on people. I had long hair when I started working here. Okay? Let y'all know that. So,
do these diffusers, or whatever you call them, run only in the summer?
No, we run them 24/7. All year long, just to keep, we don't want that area stratifying. It keeps it, you know, everything kind of consistent. We don't have the problem during the winter, but if you don't run them all the time, then everything gets clogged up. And then when you go to turn them on during the summer, then you have to hire divers to come out and clean them up.
How many of them are there?
Right now I've got 14 pods. I've got 14 pods out there.
So, and they're in a circle around the intake?
Right. You can see if you ever go to out to Chesbro, we had the buoys around it, but then those kept getting cut, so we're going to be pulling those out. But you can see all the little holes. We've put them out around the area, but we've concentrated a lot of them. The divers concentrated a lot of them right there by the intake, because the intake, it's concrete structure that has the pipe in it, 6 feet off the ground. These pods are different than the, we put new pods in because the Casco heads are spongy and they get clogged up. These ones actually sit on the ground. They lift up about a foot off the ground, so they don't, and they're weighted so they don't flip over.
I know now we're kind of locked into this kind of segmented aeration system, but maybe one of the things that we take a look at when we look at the plant upgrade is just having aerators and like maybe a couple of smaller blowers, so it's more of a non-component.
So, say again what your thinking is on scheduling a study on what we need to do.
Well,
improvements to the plant.
Yes, is you know, we didn't really have room for it this fiscal year, but I know that we were going to potentially take another look at capital improvements once we knew our starting balances, and at that time, I wouldn't mind pitching some money for that.
Yeah, I think it's important
to get started.
I think that's maybe one of the most important, besides the finance. That's maybe one of the most.
People don't like brown water coming out of their taps.
I don't like it either. So,
thank you, Travis. Thanks for everything you do.
I had a question. You got this 10 grand. Is it going to the board? Or are you going to just pay for it out of maintenance? Or what are you going to do?
I think we'll probably pay for it out of maintenance.
Okay.
And I think that it doesn't necessarily need to go through the board.
Because we have a small maintenance budget. So that's where it's coming from.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, because we don't have a capital project for that, and we do allocate some funds for maintenance every year.
We like to keep you guys informed of stuff that we're doing.
Well, we like to be informed.
Yeah.
So it all works out. All right, I think we beat that one to death.
Thank you.
All right, item H, just our SB 170 project update. Let's see. Granley's four bay improvements, still in design phase. Wastewater facility chlorine gas, sodium hypochlorite, and contact tank improvements are at the preliminary design level. We're still waiting to get back the additional alternatives back from Dewberry. And then the water facility chlorine gas to sodium hypochlorite improvements are basically ready to go out to bid. We brought the updated engineer's estimate before the board for approval. Prior to sending it out to bid, the board has directed this project to be discussed at the improvements committee level, and I think primarily that was because
we don't know how much money we have in our water reserve at this time. Is that correct?
Yeah, that was my thought, is that if we just do the first one because it came along first, it might impact the other two, and maybe we need to see the engineer's estimate for the other two before we do one. And there may be one that's most, has the highest priority, but maybe that's Granley's, I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, they're all fairly important projects. I think part of the impetus why some of these projects have risen to the top versus others is the funding attached.
Yeah, but we'd hate to have to cut one way, way back because we don't have money for it, right?
Yeah, no, I mean, I agree. I mean, we'll see what the estimates come in, and then board decides to move forward with all three of them or one of them. Mm-hmm. But I just brought it up to the committee if there was some further discussion the committee wanted to have, unless that is just, hey, let's wait till we get the other engineer's estimates at the end of the 100%, and then we move forward from there, bring those back to the committee.
My guess is the timing of those estimates is going to coincide fairly close to the completion of the audits, and then we have a pretty good handle on where we're at.
Yeah.
That'd be my preference. You have a preference?
I agree. I think that's the way to go.
Okay. All right. And let's see. Item I came to the district's attention, and I've been wondering this myself. I've yet to find any evidence that infrastructure was formally accepted from the last few developments that we've had, from Murrieta Gardens, commercial and residential developments, as well as Retreats West. And so I'm in research mode, and we need to determine, has that been accepted, and if not, how delicately to handle that, to formally accept that infrastructure, get a bill of sale from the developer, and capitalize that infrastructure properly as one should in a municipal organization. So it's kind of a TBD at this moment. Just because I haven't been able to find it doesn't mean it doesn't exist, but we have to brace ourselves to the possibility that it was not.
I think the Murrieta Gardens, residential at least, well, actually both of them, I think, were formally accepted. I'm trying my memory, but I believe they were, and in fact, there was a sticking point as to the drainage basin over there that when we accepted it, that we accepted everything except for something having to do with the drainage basin.
Do you remember what season that was in the year?
I vaguely remember that too, because John Sullivan was talking about it at a board.
Well, we met out there at the drainage basin and kicked some dirt around and said this was graded wrong and so on. But it was in the process of approving Murrieta Gardens.
Because we've had a policy for infrastructure acceptance for quite some time. So that policy most likely would have been implemented.
So we just can't find the records?
Yeah, I haven't been able to find any of the records, like in the files. And I haven't seen it on the depreciation list.
I was here when the drainage basin issue came up and when they wanted to open the Bel Air. And so that was like April, March, April-ish of 2020. And I will go back and dig all that up and give Michael all the relevant information on that.
Yeah.
So we can at least have a point to start.
Yeah, and if for some reason we don't, then, you know, I'll get with Mr. Ramos on a best, most painless way forward to properly get that infrastructure on our books. More okay. FYI. And I think we handled... Item J.
Item to care J.
So that's all I have for the report.
Comments from the public, anything? Seeing nothing, staff comments, anything? No? Marty, anything?
No.
Tony's item about the, and he mentioned that if we had comments that he would like them put in writing. Michael, if you would start out based on the conversation and come up with some ideas and email what you have to Marty and I so that we can think about it and add any questions that we have. Obviously, the biggest question is going to be, okay, what CSD get out of it? Probably not how you want to phrase that, but something similar along those lines.
Well, probably one of the things we'll get is the Cantova easement that we've been asking for.
There you go.
Because it was brought up to me in the meeting right after we discussed that.
All right.
That's one thing.
Sure. And that having been said, we are to adjournment.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you.